tuned into Quick Charge, the high voltage podcast bringing you the top stories in electric vehicles and sustainable energy daily. And it's all powered by Electrek. Welcome to Quick Charge. It's January 20th, 2026, and I'm your host, Joe Boris. It is a bitterly cold week here in Chicago, and not just because of this weekend's playoff loss, but we're going to move on and move past it, and we are going to talk about technology and tariffs. That's because Elon Musk says Tesla is almost done with the tech behind the AI5 design. 6 months after saying it was finished, Elon took to X on Friday to announce the design for Tesla's next generation self-driving computer. The AI5 chip was almost done, fully 6 months after announcing it was finished. We've been tracking the development of Tesla's AI5, formerly known as Hardware 5 or HW5, for a while now. It represents the automaker's next major step in onboard computing power following the transition from HW3 to HW4 over the last few years. Musk made the announcement in a recruitment post on X this morning. Quote, "Our AI5 chip design is almost done and AI6 is in early stages, but there will be AI7, AI8, AI9 aiming for a 9 month design cycle. Join us to work on what I predict will be the highest volume AI chips in the world by far." The update comes just months after we reported that Tesla had delayed the volume production of the AI5 chip to mid-2027. At the time, Musk confirmed that while samples might be ready sooner, the several hundred thousand units needed for vehicle production wouldn't be available until then. Today's news that the design is almost done contradicts his claim that the design was finished in July of 2025. You can read the tweet here. This is directly from x.com, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes over at electrek.co. Now, talking about Tesla, talking about their competitors in both AI, ADAS, full self-driving, and of course, vehicle manufacturing in general, you're talking about China. That's really where all of Tesla's big global competitors are coming from. And soon, everyone here in North America is going to get a chance to sample some of these Chinese vehicles. That's because Canada is breaking with U.S. policy, splashes its 100% tariffs on Chinese EVs all the way down to just 6%. In a massive shift in North American trade policy, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney announced today a new strategic partnership with China that effectively reopens the Canadian border to Chinese electric vehicles. The move marks a significant departure from the U.S. hardline protectionist stance and could bring affordable EV options like the BYD Seagull to Canadian roads as early as this year. Part of a broader trade agreement secured by Prime Minister Carney in Beijing this week, Canada is agreed to allow an annual quota of 49,000 Chinese electric vehicles into the country at a tariff rate of just 6.1%. According to the Prime Minister's office, this volume represents less than 3% of the Canadian new vehicle market. However, the deal explicitly targets the low end of the market, with the government anticipating that within 5 years, quote, more than 50% of these vehicles will be affordable EVs with an import price of less than $35,000. In exchange for opening the EV floodgates, or at least starting to break them down, China has agreed to lower tariffs on Canadian canola seeds from 85% to 15% and lift restrictions on Canadian lobster and crab. The Canadian government claims this isn't just about imports. The text of the agreement states the deal is expected to, quote, drive considerable new Chinese joint venture investment in Canada to build out the domestic EV supply chain. While we're talking about China and Chinese EVs, we have to talk about another Chinese EV giant that is beginning to test solid-state batteries with more than 600 miles of range. Another one of China's big four automakers began selling solid-state EV batteries in vehicles this week, promising over 620 miles of range. Dongfeng Motors sub-brand Yipai Technology announced on its WeChat page late last night that the company has begun testing a solid-state battery prototype in extreme cold weather conditions. The prototype is equipped with Dongfeng Motors' 350 watt-hour solid-state battery, which the company claims can deliver more than 600 miles of CLTC driving range. In November, the company said its solid-state batteries passed 170 degrees Celsius, 338 degrees Fahrenheit hot box test without burning or exploding, far exceeding China's national standard of 130 degrees Celsius. Even more impressively, the battery retained 72% of its energy at negative 30 degrees Celsius. Dongfeng's latest tests are taking place in China's northernmost city, Mohe, best known as a cold weather testing hub, focuses on three areas under frigid cold weather conditions: range, charging, and durability are underway. Now, speaking of extreme cold, we have to go to this study here. Even in extreme cold, EVs outperform diesel and save drivers money. I put this together a couple days ago. Fleet managers don't get paid to argue on Facebook. That is a pretty bold claim, but I think one that a lot of general managers and CEOs and CFOs would immediately support. They get paid to look at numbers and make decisions in the best financial interests of their companies. According to studies that follow real-world fleets in the most extreme cold weather conditions in North America, EVs don't just survive, they thrive, beating out diesel on the balance sheet. Backed by an NREL study that explores how EVs and EVSE perform in temperatures as low as negative 40 degrees Celsius, researchers from the University of Alaska collected data from drivers in Kotzebue, Galena, and Bethel to determine where and how electric vehicles may be most useful. The study was called, "Are Electric Vehicles a Solution for Arctic Isolated Microgrid Communities?" When the crunching was done, the numbers were brutal for diesel. Even in some of the coldest, most remote operating conditions in the world, electric vehicles delivered lower total operating costs than diesel once fuel, idling, block heaters, maintenance, and downtime were fully accounted for. Quote, in only 4 of the 21 EV use cases, net fueling costs increased with a switch to EV, mainly in communities with less renewable energy and consequently higher electric rates, and for vehicles with short driving distances, low block heater use, and warm idling. That said, just because EVs can win on cost and reliability in bitterly cold conditions, there's a lot more nuance here than just, quote, EVs are better. The University of Alaska study found that short commutes in these communities put a high energy cost on getting passenger cabins warm, either in terms of idling time with internal combustion or battery power in an EV. This increased energy costs in either case and significantly raised harmful emissions in the case of internal combustion, making this one a bit of a draw, with ICE having a bit of an edge over electrics in very short cold weather commutes. That's when the vehicles were stored outside. Storing vehicles indoors significantly improved things for EVs. Quote, the findings indicate that EVs can successfully function in extreme cold, though efficiency is significantly affected. Vehicles stored in heated environments outperformed those stored outdoors, with efficiency dropping by up to 69% for outdoor storage. Despite these challenges, none of the vehicles experienced failures that prevented travel. Storing EVs indoors led to benefits such as faster preconditioning and improved efficiency, while charging in extreme cold, though slower, remained functional. The study also showed that high utilization and high mileage fleets like rideshares, taxis, and last mile delivery vans benefited the most from electrification, as daily operating hours and the miles driven increased and temperatures dropped. EVs consistently outperform diesel. We've got a great look here at some of the methodology that was used in both the NREL and University of Alaska studies, showing what kind of logic they were looking at, what kind of math they were using. Doesn't get into formulas, but you can check the studies from there. Again, we'll have that in the show notes. Now, finally, we're going to close this off with something a little offbeat, but still very much on theme for it being oh so cold outside. Germany is using heated bricks to replace gas-fired industrial boilers. Rondo Energy and Covestro broke ground on a new kind of industrial heat battery at Covestro's Brunsbüttel chemical site in northern Germany, and it's designed to do something industry desperately needs: make clean, reliable steam without burning fossil fuels. Thanks to a surplus of renewable energy, Germany logged 573 hours of negative electricity prices in 2025. That is a 25% increase from 2024. Rondo's heat battery charges up when there's a surplus of cheap renewable electricity on the grid, stores that energy as heat in specially designed bricks, and then delivers steady, high-temperature steam around the clock for industrial processes. It's aimed squarely at replacing fossil fuel-fired boilers in facilities that run 24/7. At 100 megawatt hours, the Brunsbüttel system is scheduled to come online by the end of 2026, and it will be tied with the 100 megawatt hour Rondo heat battery that went into operation in California back in October. Once operational, the battery is expected to supply about 10% of the steam needed at the Brunsbüttel site and cut carbon dioxide emissions by 13,000 metric tons per year. Steam production is a major energy demand for Covestro, and at the site, it's currently still largely powered by natural gas. That's all we've got for today here at Electrek. Be sure to check back tomorrow, like, subscribe so you don't miss it. Let us know what you think in the comments.